Now, you are, you know, definitely an American, and I'm a little curious about this. You've been living over in England for how many years now, Scott?
Gosh, it's, you know, I kind of lost count.
It's over 20 years,
the actual
right?
number, but 1974.
And why did you
say? My joke is I only came over for the weekend.
Yeah, and from what I understand, from what I read, I don't know if this is true, but from what I read, there were 30 days left on your visa when you auditioned for Thin Lizzy.
No, that's
is that wrong?
No, that's absolutely right. You know, and when this Irish friend of mine came up to me and said that there's this band, I know they're looking for another guitar player. Do you want me to put your name in? I said, well, who? What's the name of the band? And he said, well, it's a group. It's an Irish group called Thin Lizzy. And all I could think of was, wow, what a dumb name. I don't even know what that means. What's a Thin Lizzy?
It's not a lean Lizzy. It's a Thin Lizzy.
It's a Thin Lizzy, right? But, you know, I figured, you know, I've only got 30 more days left in the country. I want to play with as many people as I possibly can. So what the hell, you know.
Yeah.
Give me the guy's number or address or whatever. I can't remember which way it went down. And I'll get a hold of him, and I'll go down and have a blow. And that's basically what I did.
Wow. You probably never saw this coming.
No. I actually thought he was going to be, to me, it was going to be a band that was going to be kind of nothing. And it was another way to kind of fill your time to fill in that 30 days. Because up until that point, not a whole lot had been going on. I mean, I started a couple of pub bands that played a lot around London, but, you know, that was kind of it.
So, yeah.
But to my way of thinking, well, here's just another thing to go down to. But when I actually got up on stage with these guys and they started to teach me, you know, their songs, about the second song in, all I could think of was, you know, man, I really want in this thing.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are great. You know, each individually, musically, these guys were accomplished guys.
Yeah, great players.
Brian Robertson, I think at the time he was 17 years old, and he was just kind of shredding the joint apart, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Brian Downey, the drummer, you know, I'm thinking, Jesus, this guy can really hit him. And now I'm looking at this guy in the middle, this black guy playing bass, you know, with an Irish accent. What's all that about, you know? But he was this really charismatic guy, you know. When he talks, everybody looked in his direction. So you definitely knew that this guy sitting in the middle here, he was the leader of this whole gang, you know. So, but like I say, after about the second song, I really wanted in this band called Thin Lizzy.
Do you remember the guitar that you pulled out of your case to audition for Thin Lizzy? Do you remember
what it was? That was, you know, I had originally brought over two guitars with me. One was a Stratocaster, a Fender Strat that I'd bought in Los Angeles. And the other one was this black Japanese Les Paul copy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was such a cheap guitar that even the manufacturers were embarrassed about it and didn't even put a name on the stock head. It was that bad, you know. But, you know, you're probably wondering why I didn't bring the Strat. I'd run out of money maybe a month beforehand, and I needed to sell it. So the guy sold it in Supertramp. So I sold it to Roger Hodgson for, I think, £125.
Wow.
So, you know, Roger goes out and sells 80 million albums with it.
Yeah.
Bastard. Give that back to me.
Give it back, yeah.
But like I said, if we go back to the original Thin Lizzy meeting, Phil actually said, well, you know, get your guitar out and come up on the stage here and we'll teach you some of the songs. And I unhooked the guitar case, brought this thing out, and looked up, and I think I saw Brian Robertson's eyes roll in the back of his head. It's like, oh, my God, what have we got here, man? Guy doesn't even have a proper guitar, you know.
Didn't they take you shopping for a guitar eventually?
Well, yeah, you know, when Phil gave me the call, he said, well, let's meet up tomorrow at the rehearsal place, and one of the first things he said is, he says, you know, the first thing we have to do, we got to go out and buy you a decent guitar.
Uh-huh.
And I said, yeah, I know. Geez, I'm sorry about that. He goes, ah, no problem. We'll go down. We're going to town, and me and you, we'll buy a guitar.
Okay.
So we go into these guitar shops, and immediately I walk straight over to a Les Paul Standard. I'm ready to pick it up. I look over at Phil, and Phil's going, I don't think so. Because he's already seen the price tag, right?
Yeah.
So I go over to another one. I said, just about picked that one up. Phil's going, I don't think so either on that one. So I go over to this Deluxe, right? And I'm just getting ready to grab that one. I look up and he goes, yeah, that might be okay.
Yeah.
So I picked up that one and then several Deluxes after that, and found the one that fit and sounded really good. And we ended up buying that one. That's the red Deluxe that I used to play.
Well, it certainly served you well, that little Japanese knockoff, didn't it?
Yeah, it got the job done.
What kept you there all these years? Was it because of the band? I mean, that is your home now. England has been your home. And, you know, as an American, I'm just curious as to what kept you there all these years.
Well, you know, in 83/84, when the band finally did break up, you know, I talked to my wife about that. You know, I says, you know, we can actually go anywhere we want to now and go back to America or wherever, you know.
Yeah.
But we, you know, when we started to really think about things, you know, now I'd been in London for 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have no idea where, you know, friends that you grew up with and all that back in L.A. I had no idea where any of those people were.
Yeah.
I'd made so many in the 11 years. I'd made so many friends over here, you know, business contacts.
Sure.
Now you're married with the four bedroom house and the three cats and all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just seemed like a sort of a logical step to actually just stay in London.
Yeah, and
there are days, AJ. There are days you get, you know, 2 weeks of overcast and rain. You think, oh my God, did I make a mistake here?
Yeah, yeah. I bet.
I could be in California.
You could
at
be
this
in
point,
sunny,
you know?
California, my friend. You know, but but hey, it's your home, and you know, you're happy there, and like you said, you know, really, it's kind of like. It's almost as if, you know, your family's there now because you've been there so long because of so many of your close friends and associates and things like that.
Exactly. You know, every once in a while, you'll fly back to L.A. and I feel like the foreigner now because so many things have been built up since, like Glendale. I grew up in a place called Glendale, California, and it's pretty much unrecognizable to the Glendale that I grew up in.
Yeah.
You know, there's just so many more buildings and houses and streets have been built. So it's pretty much not the same place any longer, but it's still a great place, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, the tour is going really well. The reviews are coming in and everyone seems to love what you guys are doing. And I see that you're hitting the States. The first stop on the U.S. tour is right here in Pennsylvania. What brought you back to Pennsylvania? You must love Pennsylvania, brother. You must.
We love Pennsylvania. Are you kidding? Come on.
We know how to rock it down here in Pennsylvania, my friend.
You do. You know, it's just going to be good to being able to come back to America and just play to everybody. You know, I think you mentioned it a little while ago. Was it 5 years since we've been there?
It's been five
something
years,
like
Scott.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's
6 years,
quite a long
actually.
Time.
Six.
I'm six. Well, yeah. There you go. Yeah, because I was talking to a guy from Toronto earlier today, and he was saying it was 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, so, it's 6 years, I believe.
Yeah, so, it, you know, we got to come back. We got to show everybody, you know, what we can do and why we're doing it.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, you know, when we first started this thing, there was a fair few naysayers. You know, geez, these guys shouldn't be doing it. You know, there's no Phil and all that. And, you know, I was on their side. I understood what they were talking about. But, you know, these days it's all changed now. You know, we've all, you know, jumped that emotional hurdle and people actually come out now. And, you know, we all have a great time together. So It's what I want to show everybody, when we come to America.
You know, although there hasn't been a studio album since Phil left us, there has been a release last year, or was it 2 years ago now? I want you to tell the listener a little bit about this gem of tapes that you were found from a concert at the Tower Theater in Philadelphia, and now there's a new live album out called Still Live and Dangerous. Can you tell the listener a little bit about that whole process of where you found the tapes and how we have another Thin Lizzy live album and how you feel about that live album?
Well, you know, we knew that we had to get in the, if I can call it, the vault, where all the our tapes, multi-tracks were stored. We needed to go in there and to kind of save the tapes. And it's a process known as baking the tapes. And then what you do is you take that baked tape, and you can only play it a couple of times after that because it's so fragile, and then you get it down onto a digital format where the tape becomes safe. So as we were, you know, going through all this kind of mountain of multi-track boxes, we came across this one or two boxes that just said Philadelphia on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, geez, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
You know, and it had turned out to be this live show that we did in at the Tower Theater in Philadelphia, and it was for the, and I don't know if it's still going on now, I can't believe it is, but it was a show called the King Biscuit Hour.
Oh, sure, and we remember that.
Right. So what had happened is, you know, most bands went in there and just played one night, but for some reason we got two nights out of it.
Okay.
So we had two nights to choose to actually, you know, take these tracks from. And so when I was showed the album and when I heard it, I thought, you know, hey, this is really great stuff, you know. MTV and VH1 got on board. They wanted to release it, so you know, I got a buddy of mine who I played golf with all the time. His name is Glenn Johns. You might know his name from he engineered and produced Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and the Stones, and he had his big hand in with the Who and all that. And he's just a real legendary guy. And I thought, what a great guy to have, you know, behind the console mixing this tape from 1977.
77, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So, and he actually loved the idea, so he jumped on. He mixed it for us. And it came out, you know, really well. It's been really well received, and it's a nice thing to have out there, you know.
I gotta tell you, to capture a performance, and I don't know, you know, me being a Pennsylvania boy, to find out that it was done at the Tower Theater, I don't know, kind of makes it near and dear to my heart, man. Because it's right here in my backyard. So I'm glad to hear that you went back and found these tapes, and that you were actually able to save it, you know, because when they get that old, Scott, it, like you say, you know, you got to bake them and all that. And sometimes, you know, you don't get what you want, because I think I had read that there was a few cuts. There was some of it wasn't salvageable.
That's
you couldn't save it.
Absolutely right. Yeah, we had gotten there a little too late.
Yeah.
For I think maybe three or four of the tracks, you know, so that was a little depressing. It happened on a couple of the other multi-tracks too, so that's why it became, you know, really important that we step it up and put some hurry up on getting these tapes baked and save them, you know. So there you go.
How does Scott Gorm relax? What are you doing with yourself, you know, on your time when you're in between gigs and so forth? Like, what are your hobbies? What are you into on your downtime, man?
Well, you know, I used to play, you know, a lot of tennis and all that until I blew my knee out, so I couldn't do that. I used to love just playing basketball and, motorcycles and all that, but, you know, I found out that I couldn't do any sort of knee-jarring sports any longer because, the knee just wouldn't let me do it.
Yeah.
And it was my brother-in-law from Supertramp that introduced me to golf. We were recording in his studio in Encino in California, and as it happens, you know, studios just kind of go down for the count. There's nothing you can do about it until the engineer gets there and fixes it.
That's so, right.
You know, so it's like 10 o'clock in the morning, and I said, well, what the hell are we going to do now?
Yeah.
He goes, well, come on, man, let's go out and play golf. And I went, golf? What, are you kidding me? Are you nuts? And he said, no, man, we all play, you know, the road crew, you know, the other guys from other bands and all that. Come on, let's go. So he takes me out there, you know, and I have no idea what I'm doing, but there was one shot that I hit on that day.
Yeah.
That I hit it so perfect and so sweetly, and it landed right on the green.
Uh-huh.
I mean, to this day, I remember that's the shot that bit me right in the ass. I've been playing golf ever since.
Oh, wow, man. You know, you're going to have to get out there on the course with Alice Cooper to get your ass waxed.
I've already done that. I've had Alice at my golf course, yeah.
How'd you fare? How'd you do
against
Alice?
Oh, no, good. You know, Alice really is a good player.
Mm-hmm.
I think at that point he was playing to about maybe 4 or 5 handicap. From what I've heard, he plays to 1 now, or maybe even scratched. So, you know, we've got some shows with Coop probably in a couple of months' time in Ireland. It's ourselves, Alice Cooper, and Def Leppard. So I'm sure that... he will probably wake my ass up at the crack of dawn, right?
And say, oh, sure.
Come on, let's go out.
That's
let's
right.
Go out and play.
You'll be out in them golf carts with Alice, that's for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because
he's a really great guy to actually go around the golf course with. You got to remember, when you go out there, you're out there for 4 or 5 hours.
Right.
So you got to pretty much like the guy that you're with, right? But, you know, he's got so many great stories to tell you on the way around that you know, if you're not entertained by the golf, you know, his stories were keeping you entertained. So it was a lot of fun that day.
I'm sure. That's a hell of a bill, too. Alice Cooper, Def Leppard, Thin Lizzy. Whoa.
Yeah, in Ireland. So
In Ireland. Look out.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I see you're doing the Sweden Rock Festival this year.
Yep. Sweden Rock. We've got Downloads. I think we've got... something called the V Festival. There's quite a few festivals that we're doing over the over the summertime. So we're going to be pretty big. Plus, we're going to South America this year.
Oh, you are good.
Oh yeah, and they're talking about probably Japan at some point. So there's going to be a lot of butt time in the airplane, you know, this year. So
that's
a good thing.
It is a good thing. I mean, you know, yeah. I see on the website here, which, by the way, could you tell the listener what there are a few Thin Lizzy websites out there. Can you tell the listener what's the best Thin Lizzy website that they should be going to?
Anything that says official on it.
I'm looking at thinlizzyband.com.
There you go.
I think that's the one, because there's a couple out there.
That's actually the one to go for. That'll be the most up-to-date information. It'd probably be the most truthful information. I know we do have a Facebook page that a friend of mine from Toronto runs. That's also a really good place to go to for anything, all things Thin Lizzy. So.
Okay, cool. Hmm. All right, very good. Well, you know, we were told that we only had so much time with you today, Scott.
Right. Well,
so,
we've gone over that.
We've gone over that and above. So, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. It's going to mean a lot to our listeners. We've got a huge Thin Lizzy block of fans here in our listening area, and they're going to be really, really excited to hear you talk to them. So, again, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us. And most importantly, Scott, I want to thank you for the music and thank you for continuing the legacy of this band and keeping this music alive. You know, many pundits, many critics will always take pot shots at a band that has lost members and continues on and so forth. And I personally have always felt that the music must live on, the music must survive. And if any member of a band still has the temerity and the will to continue on with the legacy of music that they were a part of, that it should go on. So, again, I congratulate you, and kudos to you, Scott Gorham, for keeping the band, the music, and the name of this band alive and still in our hearts and our ears. So thank you for that, Scott.
Well, AJ, as always, it's a real pleasure to talk with you. We have talked in the past. We've always had a great time, and thank you so much for all those kind words. And, you know, all I've got to say is if anybody wants to take a pot shot, please come out, see us first, see what we do, and if you want to load the gun up at that point, fine.
Right. Right. That's more than fair, my friend, right?
There you go. Yeah, you know, I'm up for the pot shots, man.
Fantastic. Well, I am coming up to the gig, man.
Good.
And
we can have a drink. Are you drinking?
Yeah, sure. I'll have a beer with you, bro.
There you go. Okay, man. We can just do a little backstage beer. Never hurt anybody.
Yeah, so I will. You'll be at Penn's Peak on March 24th, a Thursday night. And the security is pretty tight up there, so... hopefully, you know, how we contacted you is going to be the same people that will make sure that I can get back there to see you.
We'll just go through the same channels.
Okay.
I'll make sure that the, tickets, backstage passes, however many you want.
Very cool.
And you're there, bud.
All right. Fantastic. Well, then I will be there and I'll see you after the show.
Cool, man.
It's been a blast, Scott. Thank you, bro.
It has. Hey, thanks for a fun interview, man. It's been really good.
Okay, man. Take care.
Yeah, see you on the 24th.
You got it. Take care, Scott.
Thanks, AJ.
Okay, you got it, bro. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.